This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me. 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is Tuesday, April 16th. Their weather from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. A sunny day on the way, high 71. Tonight and overnight, clear, low 51. And then Wednesday morning clouds, afternoon showers, high 61. If you are walking out the door with us right now, 47 and clear in Orangeburg up in Rockland County, 52 and clear over in Linden in New Jersey, and it is 52 and clear outside our Midtown studios. So much to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning, we were watching on last night as a wall along the New Jersey Turnpike collapsed onto the road in Elizabeth. And this was onto some sort of side street, debris crashing onto Elizabeth Avenue at 4th Street. Fortunately, no injuries. This is an area where there's a ton of cars going through at most hours of the day and night. In this case, thankfully, nobody around. A lot of people in the neighborhood heard the crash. Some people even picked it up on their doorbell cameras.
I've been in town for over 30 years, and I've never imagined I would see the turnpike missing a wall.
So last night, this roadway was closed. We'll check in with Joel Nolan in just a few minutes to see if it's still affecting the commute this morning. But there was a cleanup underway overnight.
I looked at the Ring camera one more time, and thank God there was no cars passing by.
It was very scary, but we saw that everyone got away safely, thank God.
Yeah, so we'll check on that in a moment. Also into the evening, into the overnight, the big talk, of course, was about the legendary radio voice of the Yankees, John Sterling, making, well, he's an 85-year-old guy, but a surprising announcement that he was going to resign effective essentially immediately. He's been calling Yankee games, well, 36 years now. He's called over 5,000 games, 211 postseason Yankee games. His final game this season was the Yankees 8-3 win versus Toronto on April 7th. He'll be recognized in a pregame ceremony April 20th. We'll visit the fan during the game. So he put out a statement that he's been a blessed human being, that he's been able to do what he wanted to do in broadcasting for 64 years. You know, it's funny. People were talking about this last night, and it was amazing to hear how many people do not like him. I always found him highly entertaining.
And if it's hit in the air, the deep left, it is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a grand slam. Non dimentica. That ball sure traveled far. Giancarlo, he hits a grand slam deep in the left field seats.
Right, so some people like me, I love that. Other people just hate that. They want a straight, clean call. Sterling, a native New Yorker, inducted into the State Broadcasters Hall of Fame back in 2016. No doubt he deserves to be there.
Here's the 1-2. Swung on, and there goes deep left. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Over the bullpen into the crowd. It's Gleyber Day. He hits a 3-run home run to left field. And like a good Gleyber, Torres is there.
Yeah.
And the Yankees take a 5-2 lead.
You know, I've had the honor to meet him a few times, and I keep meaning to ask him how much of that he prepares ahead of time. Like, how did he know to say all that? He must prepare it ahead of time.
One out, no one on. Bottom of the eighth, 1-0 Seattle. It'll be a 3-2. Swung on and hit high in the air to deep right. That ball is high, it is far, it is gone! Bernie goes boom! He drills a home run the short way in the right field seats. Burn, baby, burn! And the Yankees tie the ball game at one.
No doubt his voice will be missed, and we'll have more of that from James Flippin right here.
For 35 years, spanning an incredible 5,000 games, Sterling has been the voice of the Yankees. His home run calls, unforgettable.
An A-bomb from A-Rod. That ball is high, it is far, it is gone!
At 85 years old, Sterling has been traveling less in recent years, but showed off his toughness last season, shaking off a foul ball to the face.
Ow! It really hit me. I didn't know it was coming back that far.
And as he said thousands of times,
ball game over! Yankees win! The Yankees win!
James Flippin for 77 WABC News.
So the thought is, like, why not a goodbye tour? I guess we'll get more information in this as the days wear on. But anyway, John Sterling, that's it. His career over. Gonna get a big celebration at Yankee Stadium later this week. An investigation is underway in Montclair, New Jersey. A police officer shot. Shooting happened. This was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday. The cops were called to this home on a residential street in Montclair, and they found themselves face to face with this mom who had two young kids in the home who apparently started firing at them, so they fired back.
I was walking up to my house, and the officer said, run, run, run.
They just went in, and I heard screaming, gun, and next thing I know, I heard, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, so neighbors, of course, saying they live in a normally quiet neighborhood, and that's what we always hear from people in these neighborhoods until something like this happens.
She came out with a shotgun saying this is her effing territory, her effing territory.
So we don't know why police were called to the home. We checked this morning. They didn't give us much detail. Neighbors shocked to learn of the gunfight with the police. So the police officer who took a bullet in his arm. And what was wild to watch is how brave and heroic these guys are. His arm was bandaged up and he stayed on the scene. The woman who was hit by gunfire, she's in the hospital. Everybody's going to be okay. But again, we don't know really what started this all.
I don't know her, but she didn't seem the type of person to even own a gun.
That was like the last person that I expected that. You know, I thought maybe somebody ran in the house and was, you know, robbing them or something.
That's what all the neighbors said. They said they did not know this woman well because she had moved in recently, but they say surprised to see that she had a gun and that she would use it against the police.
We always say it's never going to happen where you're at, you know, now it has, unfortunately, in this peaceful, quiet town.
Yeah, it doesn't happen till it does happen. Of course, there's more details, and I'm sure they'll come out of why and what prompted the shooting. We'll pass that on to you. WABC News Time 509. Okay, former President Donald Trump taking to a courtroom lower Manhattan yesterday in this hush money trial. He's going to be in court for the next 6 to 8 weeks. It was jury selection that began and got underway yesterday. That could take up to 2 weeks to finish off. The former president complaining yesterday that the judge in his trial won't excuse him to attend his son Barron's high school graduation.
My son has worked very, very hard. He's very proud of the fact that he did so well. And I was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there.
And the former president also complaining that Judge Juan Mershon will not allow him to attend next Thursday's Supreme Court argument over his immunity claim.
It's a scam. It's a political witch hunt. It continues, and it continues forever. And we're not going to be given a fair trial. It's a very, very sad thing.
Now, it's mandatory he be in court every day. Court is in session. We can do whatever he wants before and after. There is some suggestion that he may go and do some campaign events at night, but it's a long day. In fact, you know, when you're sitting in court going through this, he's not doing a whole lot there. At times he closed his eyes, we were told, to rest. Maybe he was sleeping. Maybe he was just listening with his eyes closed.
Next Thursday, we're before the United States Supreme Court at a very big hearing on immunity. And this is something that we've been waiting for a long time. And the judge, of course, is not going to allow us. He's a very conflicted judge.
One of the big questions so many people have is whether the former president can get a fair trial here in New York City. Of course, Trump is a Republican, the trial taking place in a very blue Big Apple. So we asked people about this yesterday. I mean, there are a fair amount of Trump supporters in New York.
I wanted to show support for President Trump in a public way. I think it's important.
I am a foreigner, and I bought into all the ideas of America, and what Trump is doing shouldn't be acceptable to anybody, not even his supporters.
Right, so you're going to get every sort of opinion. Hundreds of Manhattanites being vetted in what's expected to be this lengthy selection process to narrow it down to 12 jurors and 6 alternates. Potential jurors who say they can't be fair or impartial are the first to be cut loose, and there were dozens that were cut loose yesterday.
I think a lot of people have predetermined outcomes about this case already, based on truth, based on lies. A lot of the stuff that's been going around, I mean, this has been in the public domain for 8 years. Why are we prosecuting it now?
Yeah, so part of it is what people come and bring into the courtroom. The ones who get through the initial rounds will then have to fill out this 42-question survey. And then they'll have to be questioned by the lawyers from both sides. And then when that's all done, finally we'll have a jury seated.
No man is above the law, no woman either. And our former embarrassment in chief should be tried for everything that he's responsible for.
You know, it's interesting. One woman we were talking with yesterday, she said, all I care about is that no Trump supporter gets onto the jury. Jury selection could take up to 2 weeks. And this trial, again, could take up to 6 to 8 weeks. If the president is found guilty in this hush money case, he could be sentenced with no time at all, parole, or up to 4 years. Of course, this is just the beginning. This whole jury process, again, could take up to 2 weeks. Meanwhile, Robert F. Kennedy saying yesterday, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I should say, saying yesterday that former President Trump's allies have reached out to him and did about joining his presidential ticket as a running mate.
The independent candidate made the claim on X today, but Trump's campaign denies it. Trump blasted Kennedy in recent weeks for his position running for the ticket as an independent. Kennedy posted Trump has called him an ultra-left radical and said he declined his team's offer. I'm Lisa Taylor.
WABC News Time 5:13. Let's go down to the U.S.-Mexico border, where it continues to be a mess. Head of the FBI says when it comes to stopping the flow of drugs from Mexico into Texas, they are getting some help from the Mexican government, but he said they'd like a whole lot more help.
We need their help cracking down on the cartels harder. We need help rooting out labs where the poison is being produced.
Christopher Wray, the FBI director, telling Congress they also need help stopping the flow of chemicals that are coming into Mexico from China. Here's the problem. That's harder to stop because the Chinese Communist Party is more than willing to work with the cartels in Mexico to get these chemicals through to the American side.
We've had a top 10 fugitive, for example, of ours that they helped us arrest and send back recently. But this is such a big problem. We need consistent, sustained assistance from them.
Yeah, and so they are getting some assistance, but not the sustained assistance. And, of course, the drugs that are going over the border are killing Americans, some 70,000 in 2022. The numbers that will all be calculated for 2023 no doubt will be higher.
The two major cartels, Sinaloa and CJNG, are the drivers of the vast majority of what we're dealing with here.
Those are some of the cartels in Mexico. And then we're seeing just these wild scenes all across the country. In San Diego, a boat landed on the beach in Carlsbad on Saturday. It dropped off 10 migrants who were then immediately picked up in a coordinated smuggling effort. So here's some people who are essentially going to be enslaved when they get to our side of the border.
Nearly running into surfers and swimmers, the boat beached itself right down here on Carlsbad off Grand Avenue. About approximately 10 people hopped out of the boat, ran into the Carlsbad neighborhoods, and were picked up by an SUV and driven away.
So now where are those people today? We don't know. San Diego County has seen a nearly 140% increase in smuggling through the ocean since 2020.
The people that jumped off the boat, ran into the neighborhood, got in a car, and got away. We have no idea who they are. We have no idea where they are. And these people were not vetted at all. Since 2020, we've seen a 139% increase in maritime human smuggling events like the one we just saw in Carlsbad last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, some really frightening scenes. In a moment, we're going to hear from President Biden, who he says he's going to maybe put down this executive order to slow the surge of illegal immigration. We'll get into that in a moment. First, 5:15, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Tuesday. Good morning, Justin Ellick.
Happy Tuesday. Good morning to you, Noam Layden.
start here on the Diamond up north in Toronto. On the field action between the Yankees and the Blue Jays was preceded by news earlier yesterday afternoon that John Sterling, the longtime radio voice of the New York Yankees, has decided to retire, effective immediately. I know you already went over this, Gnome, but I have to.
So. Okay, yeah, well, it's part of the sports report.
Sterling, 85, joined the Yankees broadcast in 1989. He went on to call 5,420 regular season and 211 postseason Yankees games. Sterling had taken on a reduced role in recent seasons and traveled less often due to health concerns. This season was his 36th in the booth and 20th working alongside Susan Waldman. Quote, I am a very blessed human being, Sterling said in a statement. I have been able to do what I wanted, broadcasting for 64 years as a little boy growing up in New York as a Yankees fan. I was able to broadcast the Yankees for 36 years. It's all to my benefit, and I leave very, very happy.
Who gets the gig now?
Oh, I don't know. Oh. I guess we'll find out probably really, really soon, I would think. I'm not sure that the Yankees get any say in that or if that's all WFAN. I don't really...
Who fills in for him when he's not there now? Or does he always... Does he make every game?
No, he definitely doesn't make every game. There's a good guy who does fill in for him. I'm actually not familiar with his name, but there is a very good guy who I like who does fill in for him. But I don't listen to the radio much anymore. I mean, back when back in the early 2010s, I would actually listen to Sterling on the radio while I watched the game
really?
On television.
Wow.
Yeah. I prefer that, just as a kid watching the games. But then I actually grew to like the Yes Network TV crew.
Michael Kay, yeah, he's
yeah,
good.
Of course, he's great. Michael Kay's great, but he's no John Sterling, in my opinion. On the field, the Yanks couldn't get anything going against Toronto, having their bat shut down en route to a 3-1 road loss. It's the first time this season New York has lost consecutive games, following their 8-7 loss at Cleveland on Sunday when the Guardians scored three runs in the 10th. Game 2 of a 3-game set in Toronto is scheduled for tonight at 7:05 p.m. Carlos Rodon will take the bump against Toronto's Yusei Kikuchi. As for the Metropolitans, Harrison Bader drove in the go-ahead run in the 8th inning for the second day in a row, hitting a 2-run double off Aroldis Chapman that lifted the Mets over the Pittsburgh Pirates 6-3. New York overcame a 3-0 6th inning deficit and reached 500 for the first time since they were 30-30 last June. The Mets have won 8 of 11 following that 0-5 start under their first-year manager, Carlos Mendoza. Up next for them is Game 2 against the Pittsburgh Pirates tonight at 7:10 p.m. Jose Quintana gets the ball on that one against Pittsburgh's Jared Jones. In NHL action, all three local squads were back out there having Sunday off at the Garden. Artemi Panarin had a goal and an assist. Igor Shesterkin made 26 saves for his fourth shutout of the season. And the Rangers beat the Ottawa Senators 4-0 to clinch the President's Trophy. Roslovich, Fox, and Lafreniere also scored, and Chris Kreider had two assists as the Rangers won their league-best 55th game and finished with 114 points, both franchise records. They'll have a home ice advantage throughout the playoffs. Four teams, Washington, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia, all still in contention to finish in the second wild card and meet the Rangers in the opening round of the postseason. In Newark, Kyle Palmieri and Brock Nelson each had a goal and an assist, and the Islanders clinched one of the two remaining playoff berths in the Eastern Conference with a 4-1 victory over the Devils. Pageau and McLean also scored as the Islanders secured third place in the Metro Division. Semyon Varlamov made 23 saves for his fifth straight win and helped New York extend its point streak to 8 games. It's looking like they'll draw the Carolina Hurricanes in their first round playoff matchup. That's your sports Gnome. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 521. President Biden debating whether to use an executive order to slow the surge of illegal immigration. Republicans say a simple cap on daily requests for asylum just not going to cut it now.
It's pretty simple. This is what the president needs to do. And honestly, he doesn't need an executive order to even do this, is deport people that are here illegally.
Texas Border Congressman Tony Gonzalez there says the president needs to surge immigration judges to the border. If people don't qualify for asylum, they need to be quickly sent back home.
The sooner you do that, the sooner this goes away, just like every other administration has done. All that's going to do is say, okay, what is the amount of criminal activity are we going to allow to be the norm? And that number should always be zero.
Meanwhile, the House expected to send articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas for his dealings with the border to the Senate today.
The move will force the Democratic-led Senate to take up the matter of impeachment against Mayorkas. Republicans in the House impeached Mayorkas in February over his handling of the U.S.-Mexico border. Mayorkas is accused of willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is expected to move quickly to dismiss the charges. I'm Lisa Taylor.
Let's move down to the White House. The U.S. says it's committed to Israel's security.
Iran launched an unprecedented aerial attack against Israel. and we mounted an unprecedented military effort to defend Israel.
President Biden there says the U.S. allies helped Israel defeat Iran's attack over the week. And Biden went on to call for a ceasefire agreement with Hamas that would include the release of the hostages held in Gaza.
Together with our partners, we defeated that attack. We're committed to a ceasefire that will bring the hostages home.
Meanwhile, the House needs to act to pass funding for Israel and Ukraine. That's what Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer was saying on Monday, citing Iran's attack on Israel.
Israel's attack underscores the best way to help Israel is for the House to swiftly pass the Senate's bipartisan national security supplemental. I strongly condemn the attacks by the Iranian government and urge them to refrain from escalating hostilities. What Iran did was dangerous, unjustifiable.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell slamming President Biden's approach to Iran. He was on the Senate floor yesterday as well, said Iran has been emboldened under the Biden White House.
The second thing we saw was a commander-in-chief sticking to the same playbook, second-guessing the will of the Israeli people and trying to tie the hands of an ally under attack.
And he says it's time for meaningful cost to be laid down on Iran in retaliation for that attack.
The fact that our collective defense has worked in this case doesn't obviate the threat. It doesn't make the need to compel Iran to change its behavior any less urgent.
That taking place as anti-Israel protests erupting around the nation on interstate roads, bridges, and cities all across the U.S. yesterday. Retired Air Force Lieutenant General David Deptula thinks there's something underneath the surface of these events.
They certainly are an example of information warfare on the part of terrorists and those who support Iran.
One of the places they converged was on the Brooklyn Bridge yesterday, clashing with police. There were arrests. They were on the Golden Gate Bridge out in San Francisco. They closed down an airport in Chicago for a while yesterday. Also chained themselves to a Boeing plant in St. Louis.
I don't know of any demands at this time, but we are. It is peaceful demonstration, but we are working on resolving this situation with the liaison.
That's a member of the California Highway Police who was trying to open up the roads around the Golden Gate Bridge yesterday.
In the beginning, it was okay.
Children in Palestine don't have water.
Now it's been a bit frustrating.
Yeah, that's a driver who got stuck in traffic there yesterday. 525, the FBI opening a criminal investigation into last month's Baltimore Bridge collapse.
Agents have boarded the cargo ship that crashed into a support pillar of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, sending the span to the bottom of Baltimore Harbor. The Washington Post reports part of the investigation is focused on whether the crew left port knowing the ship had problems. A fourth body was found inside a vehicle at the site on Sunday, with the name not yet released. Eight construction workers were knocked into the water during the incident last month, with two rescued and four recovered so far. The two who remain missing are presumed dead. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Billy Joel fans, they were fuming over the weekend after his TV concert on Sunday night got cut off. Joel's pre-tape concert celebrating his 100th residency show at the Garden got cut off by the CBS network in the middle of the song Piano Man, and then they went to the local news. This is what it sounded like.
And the piano sounds like a carnival, and the microphone smells like a beer.
Next, Donald Trump's historic criminal trial just hours away.
Yeah, it was not great for the Joel fans who had sat down to watch this concert. Of course, how many times do you need to hear Piano Man? But all right. It was Joel's concert had been delayed on CBS 30 minutes due to the Masters. And I'm thinking this is sort of a technical thing. Maybe there's just satellites and computers running this. Anyway, they yanked him off the air and brought in the local news. So big outcry from Billy Joel fans. And so now the network responding late yesterday saying that they will reshow this concert in its full on April 19th at 9 p.m. And they won't cut off Billy Joel as he sings Piano Man. Wall Street closed lower to start the week. Stocks gave up early gains as rising treasury yields took the steam out of the markets. Tech shares led the decline. Tesla down nearly 6% on news the company will lay off about 10% of its global workforce. At the closing bell, the Dow fell 248 points. S&P 500 lost 61. The Nasdaq dropped 290 points. 527, traffic, transit on the 7s. Here's Joe Nolan.
From the RayKatina.com traffic desk, a lot going on the New Jersey Turnpike this morning. First of all, on the southbound outer roadway emergency road work, tractor trailer slammed into a retaining wall yesterday right around 13, and they're working on that. Then up on the western spur by the Vince Lombardi service area, there was a disabled tractor trailer there. That looks like that might be out of the way. And the northbound on the outer roadway, the overnight road work has that shut down. Now up on the Connecticut Turnpike, I-95, construction between 13 and 14 on the northbound side, southbound between 16 and 15, and that both of those directions causing delays up in that direction. Now, if you're coming inbound from Long Island, LIE, northern, southern states, all three in pretty good shape right up to the Cross Island. If you're all the way up and down on the Cross Island Parkway, a little delay now northbound coming up to the northern state. There might be an issue there because that would be unusual for this time of the morning, this early in the morning. If you're heading inbound on the Gowanus BQE, you're slow from the top of the canal right on up and into the Brooklyn Bridge. No big deal over on Staten Island, at least not yet. A little slow go as you travel northbound on the West Shore, getting onto the Staten Island Expressway. Over in New Jersey, 82, 82, 87, 46, all that moving along pretty well. However, New Jersey Transit trains, this is a major issue. There is no northeast corridor between Trenton and Rahway. Overhead wire problems, they're cross-honoring on New Jersey Transit buses, private carriers, and PATH between Newark and the World Trade Center. But again, not affecting the North Jersey coastline, but there is no northeast corridor from Rahway south. Again, overhead wire problems and alternate side of the street parking rules are in effect. Drive a Land Rover from Ray Katining. You'll see why these SUVs are in a class of their own. Experience uncompromising performance in a Range Rover Sport, Velar, Evoque, or Defender. Schedule a test drive today. Land Rover Edison, Land Rover Marlboro. I'm Joe Nolan with traffic on Talk Radio 77 WABC.
We are just getting started on this early Tuesday morning. So much more to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning, we now know why the mayor of Atlantic City is being investigated. A street bazaar in Queens is cleared out. A New Jersey toll booth collector explains how she...
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports. And now,
talking the news with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yep, that's me. Good morning. It is Tuesday, April 16th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sunshine today. High 71, another beautiful day. Tonight and overnight, clear, low 51. And then Wednesday, we'll see some morning clouds, afternoon showers, high 61. So today's the last nice day for at least a couple days. If you're walking out the door with us right now, and always so happy that you are, 47 and clear in Orangeburg up in Rockland County, 52 and clear over in Linden, New Jersey, and it is 52 and clear right outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour down in the Jersey Shore in New Jersey. Atlantic City Mayor Marty Small Jr. and his wife, Dr. LaQuetta Small. Do you remember it was about 2 weeks ago that they held a press conference to say that we were going to hear about some charges against them and that they had a defense? Well, now we know what those charges are. And if they turn out to be true, they're really vicious charges. They're accused of abusing their 16-year-old daughter. This all according to the Atlantic County Prosecutor's Office. The Special Victims Unit has been investigating several alleged incidents involving the couple and their daughter just since December of last year. The mayor and the first lady, who is also the superintendent, by the way, of the Atlantic City school system, are alleged to have beaten their daughter on several occasions. Mayor Small is alleged to have hit the teen multiple times on the head with a broom to the point that she was knocked unconscious. LaQuetta Small, his wife, is alleged to have dragged her daughter by her hair and then hit her with a belt on one occasion. Now, apparently, there may be video of some of this, and that's what's prompting some of these charges. This was the mayor 2 weeks ago who said that the family was in therapy.
We're dealing with a family matter. We've been dealing with DCPMP, who has been excellent. We're going through family therapy and all. And that's what this should be, is a family matter.
But these allegations are really ugly if they are true. It's also alleged that Laquetta Small, again, the mayor's wife, punched her daughter in the mouth during an argument. The mayor and the first lady are both charged with second degree endangering the welfare of a child. And when you talk to people in Atlantic City, where they've seen their fair share of corruption over the years, and sometimes mayors are walked away right to prison bars, that they are not totally shocked by this, but they are surprised that it's a family domestic matter as opposed to one where someone's trying to rip off the city.
I mean, I'm not here to judge no one, but if it was anybody else, I mean, are they going to get a special treatment? We don't know.
Well, that's a great question. We don't know what's going to take place from here. These, of course, are just allegations at this point, but you do have people in Atlantic City who say they want to see heads roll and that this mayor Smalls, and his wife, who's the head of Atlantic City Schools, should both be out of jobs if these allegations end up being true. WABC News Time 538. Let's go out to Long Island. A 17-year-old Wes Islip high school student arrested, charged with criminal possession of a weapon. Apparently, he brought this gun into school, and he showed it to other students in the class. And thankfully, those students then turned him in.
How did he get hold of it?
And to think that a kid would, A, have access to a gun. Was it a legal gun? You know, did he take it from his parents? Like, where did the gun come from? I'd like to know the history of the gun.
Those are some parents with kids in the school. The gun wasn't loaded, but the student apparently had bullets on him. The superintendent of the school says that he showed the gun to other students, and one of them immediately reported it to school staff.
How does a child under the age of 18 get hold of a weapon?
Great question. A security guard took the gun from the student, and the student was kept in a secure location until police arrived. They described the gun as a revolver, and the 17-year-old is not being identified because of his age. Here in the city yesterday, some parts were hard to get around because of these pro-Palestinian demonstrations. Though some of them took place on the Brooklyn Bridge. This was right at the height of rush hour last night. We were watching this Citizen app video that shows police making a bunch of arrests after demonstrators crossed onto the bridge from the Manhattan side. It comes, of course, as the international and multi-city effort to bring awareness to the ongoing Israel-Hamas war. They also, those protesters, were down on Wall Street, not as many as were on the bridge, but they gathered to sort of scream and yell at some of the Wall Street folks.
We don't want our tax dollars continuing to fund genocide. There's a strike happening all across the country today. Students are taking off of school. People are calling out of work. People are refusing to shop, spend any money today. There have been actions shutting down the Chicago O'Hare Airport.
Some stock exchange workers did not like these pro-Palestinian protesters being there. There were some feuds, some heated moments, some pushing, some shoving. Police had to separate the sides.
This whole issue is not about Palestine or Palestinians. It's about Hamas, which is a terrorist organization. It's been around for years, funded by Iran, who tried to attack Israel with 300-plus drone missiles the other night. And Hamas has to be defeated so that the Gazans could live their lives.
And as that pro-Palestinian protest took place, a pro-Israel protest was taking place on the Upper West Side.
The hostages need to be freed today, beyond discussion, having nothing to do with anything. I don't see anybody holding Palestinian hostages.
541, let's go out to Queens. Residents and businesses have been complaining for a while that it is a mess on the streets of Jackson Heights. This is where, if you have been in the area of 91st and Roosevelt Avenue, people put out all kinds of items on the street to sell. And people who own actual physical brick and mortar businesses say, wait a minute, they're taking away business from us. And on the weekends, it's even bigger than it is during the week. I mean, you can go for blocks and people have tables up or blankets on the ground selling all kinds of items. So the police rolled in yesterday, started to kick out some of these, I guess, so-called merchants and confiscated some of their goods.
The weekend is the busiest day. They'll wrap around the entire neighborhood.
A lot of it has been, we cleaned up Corona Plaza and they went out to the side street. So they needed a place that's also out of the way.
Now, it is sort of interesting because many of the people who own businesses in Jackson Heights, Queens, are immigrants, and the people who are selling items on the street are immigrants. And they say they feel for them because some of them have no other way to make a living, but they don't want to be taking away living from them.
They hustlers, I got to say, not aggressive. They are hustlers because they need to feed their family, especially now.
But yesterday they were there, the police picking up some of the items, taking the items away. In other cases, they gave the items to these people who were selling them and told them, hey, don't come back here or I'll confiscate it next time.
We need to be empathetic and sympathetic with some of these vendors. However, what about the store owners?
Right here on this corner, you see this? It's an Argentinian bakery who was an immigrant from Argentina. The pharmacist over there, immigrant from the Dominican Republic. We want to be able to work with people, and we understand that people have to make a living, but not at the expense of our local businesses and the quality of life of the community that we live in.
Yeah, we've seen this a few times all over the city. Up in the Bronx, it's also been an issue. Same thing, cops have come in a few times clearing out these so-called markets, and a couple weeks later, maybe a month or two later, they show right back up. Don't know if that'll be the case in Jackson Heights, but police were all over it yesterday. Up in Albany, Governor Hochul announcing a deal. A budget deal has been made, 2025 fiscal year budget. She says the budget will deal with the migrant and housing crisis all over New York.
To develop over 15,000 new housing units on state-owned sites, like former correctional facilities, areas near commuter rail, and underlies SUNY properties.
Other parts of the budget will go towards combating retail theft, protecting tenant rights.
To develop over 15,000 new housing units on state-owned sites, like former correctional facilities, areas near commuter rail, and underlies SUNY properties.
And she talked yesterday about cracking down on illegal cannabis shops, which there are way more illegal cannabis shops in New York City anyway than there are legal ones. I mean, there's one right here on our block, actually, where you can go and buy weed. So, well, she said she's going to crack down on it. They've claimed they were going to, but it hasn't really happened yet.
We're providing $2.4 billion to assist, a $500 million increase, and help the city manage this unprecedented humanitarian crisis.
Also, yesterday up in Albany, you had an assemblyman and a state senator from Staten Island who were pushing the House and the Senate there to pass a bill that would stop congestion pricing.
It's time that we stand up. It's time that my colleagues in the state Senate and the assembly wake up. Have the courage. Tell them no. It's time that we stop this madness.
Those Staten Island lawmakers say Staten Island drivers are going to be hit with that $15 toll, and they say it's just not fair.
It will come down to the residents of this state and of this city putting pressure on their elected officials, their assembly members and their senators, to sign on to this bill.
There are a bunch of lawsuits trying to stop the MTA from imposing this toll, but the MTA, when you talk to leaders there, they're very confident they'll be able to start this come June. All right, 5:45. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk where we find Justin Ellis.
Thank you, Noah Layden. Start here on the diamond up north in Toronto on the field action between the Yankees and Blue Jays. That was preceded by news earlier yesterday afternoon that John Sterling, the longtime radio voice of the New York Yankees, has decided to retire, effective immediately. The 85-year-old joined the Yankees broadcast in 1989. He went on to call 5,420 regular season and 211 postseason Yankees games. Sterling had taken on a reduced role in recent seasons and traveled less often due to health concerns. This season was his 36th in the booth and 20th working alongside Susan Waldman. Quote, "I am a very blessed human being," Sterling said in a statement. "I've been able to do what I wanted, broadcasting for 64 years. As a little boy growing up in New York as a Yankees fan, I was able to broadcast the Yankees for 36 years. It's all to my benefit, and I leave very, very happy." On the field, the Yanks couldn't get anything going, really, against Toronto, having their bats shut down in a row to a 3-1 road loss. It's the first time this season New York has lost consecutive games following their 8-7 loss at Cleveland on Sunday when the Guardians scored three runs in the 10th. Game two of a three-game set in Toronto is scheduled for tonight at 7:05. Carlos Rodon will take the bump against Toronto's Yusei Kikuchi. As for the Metropolitans, Harrison Bader drove in the go-ahead run in the eighth inning for the second day in a row, hitting a two-run double off of Aroldis Chapman that lifted the Mets over the Pittsburgh Pirates, 6-3. New York overcame a 3-0 sixth inning deficit and reached 500 for the first time since they were 30-30 last June. The Mets have won 8 of 11 following an 0-5 start under first-year manager Carlos Mendoza. Up next for the Orange and Blue is Game 2 against Pittsburgh tonight at 7:10 p.m. Jose Quintana gets the ball in that one against Pittsburgh's Jared Jones. In NHL action, all three local squads were back out there after having Sunday off at the Garden. Artemi Panarin had a goal and an assist. Igor Shesterkin made 26 saves for his fourth shutout of the season, and the Rangers beat the Ottawa Senators 4-0 to clinch the President's Trophy. Roslovich, Fox, and Lafreniere also scored, and Chris Kreider had two assists as the Rangers won their league-best 55th game and finished with 114 points, both franchise records. They'll have home ice advantage throughout the playoffs. Four teams, Washington, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia, are still in contention to finish in the second wild card and meet the Rangers in the opening round of the postseason. In Newark, Kyle Palmieri and Brock Nelson each had a goal and an assist, and the Islanders clinched one of the two remaining playoff berths in the Eastern Conference with a 4-1 victory over the Devils. Pageau and McLean also scored as the Islanders secured third place in the Metropolitan Division. Semyon Varlamov made 23 saves for his fifth straight win and helped New York extend its point streak to 8 games. It's looking like they'll draw the Carolina Hurricanes in their first round playoff matchup. Playoff set to start, Noam, on Saturday the 20th. That's your sports. I'm Justin Ellicott.
Where did Caitlin Clark end up, do we know?
The Indiana Fever.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why I know that, but I do.
Huh.
Well, it was on the front page of ESPN. That's why I know that.
There
actually.
We go. All right.
Yeah. They're milking her for all she's worth.
What kind of salary is she going to get?
I have no idea. That's something you got to look into. I don't even know what the average salary is in the WNBA.
It's not a lot. I know that.
And I would probably assume that, you know, newly drafted rookies don't make, you know, probably make the league close to the league minimum, I would think. That's usually how it goes.
Yeah, but she's a superstar.
Well, yeah, but she's got to prove herself in the big leagues, no?
Yeah, but she'll be the reason why people will actually watch the
That's true.
WNBA.
That's true. She's going to bring a big draw in terms of ticket sales, jersey sales, all that good stuff. But it was a big time draft in terms of women's basketball. A lot of transcendent stars, I guess you could call them, that are going into the WNBA next year.
We'll see if it makes a difference.
Yeah, we'll see. That's your sports. No, I'm Justin Ellick, 77 WABC.
Let's catch you up with some of the big stories of the morning. Former President Donald Trump will be back in a lower Manhattan courtroom this morning, 100 Center Street, to continue the jury selection in his hush money case. Yesterday, Trump was complaining that the judge won't excuse him to attend his son Barron's high school graduation.
My son has worked very, very hard. He's very proud of the fact that he did so well. And was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there.
That was Trump speaking with reporters as he exited the courtroom yesterday. He also said that the judge, Judge Bershon, will not allow him to attend next Thursday's Supreme Court argument over his immunity claim.
It's a scam. It's a political witch hunt. It continues, and it continues forever. And we're not going to be given a fair trial. It's a very, very sad thing. Next Thursday, we're before the United States Supreme Court at a very big hearing on immunity. And this is something that we've been waiting for a long time. And the judge, of course, is not going to allow us. He's a very conflicted judge.
There were lots of people gathering around near the courthouse, as close as they could get anyway, yesterday. And all of them have different opinions about whether Trump will get a fair trial, especially in very blue New York and with Trump being a Republican.
I wanted to show support for President Trump in a public way. I think it's important.
I am a foreigner, and I bought into all the ideas of America, and what Trump is doing shouldn't be acceptable to anybody, not even his supporters.
Lots of jury members vetted yesterday in what's expected to be a lengthy selection process. They'll narrow it down to 12 jurors and 6 alternates, but the question is, can they be impartial?
I think a lot of people have predetermined outcomes about this case already, based on truth, based on lies. A lot of the stuff that's been going around, I mean, this has been in the public domain for 8 years. Why are we prosecuting it now?
So fair amount of people say they do feel confident that he can get a fair trial, but there's maybe just as many who don't feel that way.
No man is above the law, no woman either. And our former embarrassment in chief should be tried for everything that he's responsible for.
Jury selection could take up to 2 weeks. The trial is expected to last 6 to 8 weeks. The former president expected to be in court every day during those 6 to 8 weeks. Meanwhile, Out on the campaign trail yesterday, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was saying that President Trump's people actually reached out to him to be his vice presidential candidate.
The independent candidate made the claim on X today, but Trump's campaign denies it. Trump blasted Kennedy in recent weeks for his position running for the ticket as an independent. Kennedy posted Trump has called him an ultra-left radical and said he declined his team's offer. I'm Lisa Taylor.
New York City going to start a pilot program now that helps domestic violence victims. It's called Project Home. It'll help survivors with children who are living in city shelters find permanent homes and reduce the amount of time they're stuck in a shelter.
Too often, domestic violence survivors end up in shelters as they are forced to leave their homes. No one should have to experience this.
Yeah, they have to get away from their abusers. Mayor Adams there says 100 families going to be part of this pilot program. It's being paid for through a $300,000 grant from the New York City Fund to End Youth and Family Homelessness.
We are going to help 100 families in this pilot rebuild their lives, find safe, permanent homes, and reduce the time they have to spend in shelter.
Yeah, this domestic violence survivor, she was able to get an emergency housing voucher. And she says, of course, it's huge when that happens.
Every survivor deserves this opportunity. It is what has allowed me to prove that I can be successful, all while taking care of my children and my health.
MTA unveiling its first electric paratransit vehicle yesterday. An electric van has been rolled out with a total of 15 expected within a year under a $3 million pilot program.
It's a great way to start this week, kick off Earth Week here in New York City Transit at the MTA. But it's an amazing day to show how we continue to go above and beyond for accessibility at the MTA.
That's the MTA's chief accessibility officer.
We do hear from our customers that they still have a bumpy ride in some of our older vehicles, and that's what today's all about. Enhancing that customer experience, enhancing that paratransit ride for a lot of our paratransit customers.
And we'll end this hour with this woman in New Jersey who had a gut instinct that may have saved her life. She's a toll collector at the Jersey Shore on the Garden State Parkway, and she woke up early Friday morning. Her name is Jessica Daly, and she said, I had a premonition that something was going to happen to me if I went to work today. And so she called out, which she says she never does.
Like 2 a.m. I had just like a really like bad gut feeling that something was going to happen, like something terrible was going to happen if I drove to work. And it was so strong that I actually called out, and I literally never call out of work.
And here's the weird thing. About 3 hours later, a garbage truck crashed into the toll plaza, the exact one that she works in. This is at the Barnegat Toll Plaza. And the toll collector inside the booth was hurt. So was this pickup truck driver who ran into the toll booth. So she's like, somebody was looking out for me.
My immediate response, honestly, I dropped to my knees and just started praying. And I was praying for everybody involved and thanking God that I had that feeling to call out.
I think her gut instinct was an angel or a premonition from a guardian angel telling her not to go in to protect her.
Yeah, that's her mom there. Amazing, right? Daly went back to work the next day. Of course, she says she feels terrible for the woman who took over for her that day. Maybe, I guess, she should have warned her, but she didn't. She thought she was a little crazy, but she says in the end she was kind of right.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.